Today on The Grave Talks, Seances, Shadows, and Spirits, a conversation with Kadrick Olson. Kadrick Olson is an internationally renowned author, speaker, and spiritual guide who brings over 30 years of experience in the paranormal and spiritual realms. His path has led him from a haunted childhood home to mastering the spiritual arts of seance, channeling, and shadow work. Guided by beings known as the Whisperers, Kadrick uncovers profound truths about the afterlife and reveals how our darkest encounters can be paths to personal transformation. Today on The Grave Talks, we explore the mysteries of the spirit world, ancient wisdom, and the paths that lead us beyond the veil with Kadrick Olson. So Kadrick, thank you so much for joining me today. You know, I was reading up on you, as I like to do with anyone I talk about. I've decided that if you were to give out business cards, you'd almost need multiple business cards for depending on what you're going to talk to them about. Because you kind of juggle a lot of different plates, it seems like to me.
It's very true. You know, I keep hearing all these people say, stick to one lane, do one thing.
And why?
I can't. You know, I just, that's not my path in this life. My path is a teacher, a guide. And there are so many things that I've done throughout my lifetime and so much information that I've been given and that I teach that you're right. I would need multiple business cards for that. It's kind of a challenge to kind of summarize all of the things I do.
Well, because when I was reading about you, it said you have over 30 years of experience in the paranormal and spiritual realms, and that you have had the opportunity to help people navigate supernatural challenges, transmute their inner darkness through shadow work, and unlock the ancient wisdom of runes and Norse mysticism. So I was like, I'm not sure. Let's start with shadow work. I've heard that before, and I'm not 100% sure what that is.
Great. It's an interesting topic that came up several years ago in working with clients. And I kept seeing the same blocks over and over with people. Like when we're working with the paranormal, they grew up being told it's a scary, it's an evil, demonic thing. Yet they feel their psychic abilities come on. They're feeling that they're getting connected with spirits and it's not feeling bad. So they're confused. But that still sort of blocks their abilities. And so what we do with shadow work is we go to the deeper, darker places in our inner world to get familiar with what those fears are, what the shame is, what the regret is, even the things that upset us about ourselves, the things that we don't like about ourselves. We get familiar with them. We make friends with them. We learn to understand them, literally bringing light, the light of awareness, into the inner shadow world. So we understand where this comes from. We understand how those shadows helped us at one time. They helped us to adapt. And when we have that understanding, we integrate those lessons of what they really mean, you know, that we're important, that we deserve to be protected, that things are really good for us, that we have these talents. And people tap into their own authenticity. They tap into who they really are and start to live it, breathe it, be it, because they were able to look at and address those darker places that before they may have been afraid to or uncomfortable to acknowledge, look at. And so we together look into those places.
That's really interesting. And I think that's really important. Those are the things we tend to run from. And when you run from things like that, it eventually brings you down. Because you can't run from things forever. You have to deal with trauma and you have to deal with things that have happened. All of us need that kind of work.
Absolutely. And I totally get why people don't want to do it. It's uncomfortable. It's very unsettling. Who wants to sit for a half hour or so grieving or crying or being angry? Because they're unpleasant emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is with shadows is the more you push them down, the more you ignore them, the more you reject them, the harder they get set in place, the more they just kind of dig in and hold on to it. But when you go into it and you do it in a safe way, in a way that is not going to re-traumatize us or re-upset us or really bring us down. There's some work to it. But when we can address those things and we give those feelings and those memories their say, it's like releasing an emotional block, or it's like releasing an energetic block that is like a contagion. It just contaminates the energy of our being. It really makes it difficult to live who we are authentically. And there is a paranormal connection, because I've got like 10 rules for interacting with the paranormal. The biggest one is similarities attract and perpetuate. And if we're sitting on some shadow energy of fear or even self-retribution, and that just sits in there, that becomes an anchor point where entities can attach to us, can attack us, can drain us of energy, or even fuel that fear, fuel some of those negative self-thoughts. And we can get stuck into a vicious cycle that just pulls us deeper and deeper into a dark place we don't need to be.
That's so true. That's really interesting. Now, talk about a little about the ancient wisdom of runes. And am I saying that correctly? It's R-U-N-E-S.
Yep.
Runes. That's what I thought. But then all of a sudden when I'm talking to you, I'm like, I could be saying that all wrong. The ancient wisdom of runes and Norse mysticism. Talk a little bit about that as well.
This was the first paradigm that I chose to adopt so I could better understand spirituality, magic, and basically it comes down to our conscious connection with the subtle layers of reality. And the reason why I chose it is because I saw so many different pathways saying the same thing. They just use different words, different images, different concepts. And so I said, I need to choose one path. So I have like my baseline. I've got my control group, so that I could understand it. And that basically chose me. And runes, in essence, are the written language, the written form of like Proto-Norse and Old Norse languages, the Scandinavian languages. But it's also a sacred language. Every rune is a symbol that has a certain meaning, a certain ideology to it, such as like the rune Fehu, meaning value or meaning investment or money. And so when you look at like the rune Fehu, you look around the world and things that you buy have a Fehu because it's a value, but there's also an intrinsic value. You buy it and it has a deeper meaning to it. It has a more importance to it. So that's also Fehu, but also yourself, you have a Fehu, you have a value. And again, similarities attract and perpetuate. The universe is a reflection of itself. So if you have a lower opinion of your Fehu, you have a lower opinion of your value, the world around you is going to reflect that. And so the deeper wisdom of the Old Norse is learning to tap into your own subtle energies using these symbols so that you can boost yourself up into a higher place of being, so that you are literally creating the world that you want all around you, but from the inside out.
So this all begs the question to me, how did you get started on this path? Because it's a very unique skill set that you have. How did that happen? Were you kind of born that way? Were you, you know, because I think you were kind of brought up in some of that as well.
Exactly. I was literally born into this. And I do mean the word literally, because my mother's doctor, when she was pregnant with me, is Dr. Robert Bradley, who has developed the Bradley method of natural childbirth. And he was also held seances at his home. He had regular seances there. Part of the movie The Changeling with George C. Scott is based on some of his experiences. And so he was my mom's baby doctor. And the house I grew up in was very haunted. We would be watching TV back in the days when there was dials. You know, you had to get up and walk across the room.
And they would make the kids go, it's like, yes, go change a channel.
Yeah, my,
we were the remote.
Can we get a remote? He's like, why? We got a great one. You.
Go exactly.
But we could be watching TV and we would literally see the dial change. It would change channels while we're watching TV. Radios would turn on in the middle of the night. My mom collected music boxes and occasionally the one-off music box would start. But there are times where all of them, just literally all of them, would go off at the same exact moment. You'd hear footsteps walking up and down the stairs. You could be upstairs. You'd hear the toilet flush. And so to help better understand this and what was going on, my parents took me to a spiritualist church, which is like a typical Protestant church, but the service ends with trance mediums coming up on stage, one to three trance mediumships, trance mediums, and they're doing a channeling session after this. And then every Saturday night in the church basement, we attended seance.
And even the kids?
You betcha, there were kids there.
That's interesting.
And all through this, I had guides. You know, I didn't understand when I was a kid about whispers, or what I call whispers now, but I didn't understand about downloads. I didn't understand about telepathy or spirit communication. I just knew I had these teachers that I could communicate with. It wasn't like imaginary friends where we were playing games. They were teaching me things. They were teaching me how to connect with other beings, how to interact with things, about layers of reality. And they've been I remember being on the playground in elementary school, having conversations with these beings and telling my parents about the conversations I was having. So quite literally, I was born into this. I grew up learning how to do seance. I grew up communicating with spirits. And it was a challenge watching like movies and TV shows because they scared me. You know, when you're a little kid, those things are really scary. Like watching The Exorcist at 7 years old was terrifying.
It's still kind of terrifying, even as an adult, actually.
Absolutely. But the thing
at seven, yes.
None of these movies matched what I was experiencing. You know, I'd go to the seance or I'd talk to the spirits in the house or, you know, things would move in the house. And I'm like, but it's not like something banging on the walls and throwing things across the room, yelling, get out. There's no head spinning and green pea soup flying everywhere. It was just very chill. It was just very relaxed. It was like, oh, hey, we're here. What are you doing? How are things going? It was nothing scary about it at all. So it was really, I had to overcome that dichotomy of my personal experiences versus the pervasive message about the paranormal being scary, because to me, it was just a natural part of life.
Now, your parents obviously were curious, which is what led them to the church, I'm sure.
Yes.
Did they, and because your abilities are unique, I'm going to guess they might not have had the same experience in this life that you've had, but did they kind of nurture that within you?
Absolutely. When I was in junior high, my mom made sure I went to psychic development classes regularly. There was a local shop owner, Joe Rock, would at the community college, had weekly classes in psychic development, everything from telepathy and psychometry to channeling to learning how to use pendulums and dowsing rods. So you bet, that was fostered. And if I ever wanted a book on anything, my mom would stop by the local metaphysical bookstore, grab that. If I wanted some herbs to make my own incense, not a problem. So it was definitely encouraged and fostered. It wasn't like I hear so many families about telling the kids to stop it, that it's evil, you can't do this, it was bad. It was encouraged, and I was completely allowed to do this.
Did you ever think along the way, like, I think I want to go to nursing school, or I want to maybe be a civil engineer? Or were you always kind of felt like, because of this experience, you were sort of destined to be on the path that you're on?
Well, that's a good question, too, because I did originally go to school for psychology because I knew I was kind of being pulled in that direction. Didn't quite go that well. And another interesting aspect of me, I was one of those kids that read music before words. So I've played music my entire life. You know, I'm surrounded by musical instruments all the time. And so I thought I was supposed to go into the music business. I thought I was supposed to be a musician. And when that fell hard, and it fell really hard, I was in a dark night of the soul for like 3 years after getting really burned by the music industry. And that's when the whispers, my teachers, my guides, I call them the whispers, kept giving me new information. They kept saying, try this, you're going to do this, you're going to learn this. And I kept going, okay, great, let me write a book, let me put up websites. They're like, no, we're giving this to you to use. So I started putting that to use, and I realized, now this is the path forward. My purpose in this life is to teach. It is to bring these spiritual teachings. It is help to elevate people in a spiritual level. And the music, sure, it's here. It's still fun. I still play it. I still have a guitar. I've got some folk instruments, Scandinavian folk instruments. But my purpose in this life is to teach the spiritual work.
Hmm. Because I will vouch for you, the music industry is brutal. I worked in radio for years as a music director and just working with labels. And it's a tough, tough business. It really is. And it is hard on people.
Yeah, I just don't have the teeth for it. Yeah. Seriously,
you just think, oh, you get up and play music. There's a lot of business that goes on behind it. It's very interesting. So once you decided that you're on the right path, you know, even then you have to kind of still come into your own, as we all do. You might feel like, I can help people with this, but figuring out what that looks like, how that help presents to other people, how you can even say, I have these guides, or you call them whisperers. I'm sure you've seen it in your life, that look people will give you like, what? So that's a lot of overcoming of things you have to do to even create the path for yourself. How were you able to take your gifts and what you've learned and kind of start helping other people with it?
Great question, because it's a combination of shadow work and fool's path.
Mm.
Because a lot of what you're just describing is why we have to do that shadow work, to get rid of other people's expectations, to let go of other people's comfort zones or other people's, you know, impressions of what you're supposed to be. Shadow work gets rid of that so you can be yourself authentically. And then the fool's path is, to me, part of the way that you find your purpose in life is you kind of get a feel for the direction that you're supposed to be going, but it's a co-creative process. You can think that higher self came here to experience something, to live a certain purpose, but it's more like a general direction. It's not like, oh, you are going to be a pet psychic or you're going to be a veterinarian. It's more like a general flow. I want to work with animals and I want to help people connect better with animals, that sort of thing. And then you, in your 3D day-to-day self, get the fool's path. That means you don't know where you're going. You don't know how you're going to get there. You don't know what you're going to do. And you're certainly going to suck at it, but you're just going to do it anyway.
Which we've all been there.
Exactly.
Anyone listening right now can relate to that.
Exactly. And so you co-create that. It's like you get the general direction of what your purpose is. And then you, in your day-to-day self, through trial and error, get to create how that gets expressed in the physical world.
That's interesting. Now, when you talk to the whisperers, and you said they've taught you things, is it kind of teaching you things about yourself, teaching things about another realm that we don't always interact with? All of the above? You know, what is it that they kind of show you or lead you to, or it's have led you to?
Yeah, it's all of the above. It's helping me sometimes to see some of my own blind spots or to help me find what that direction is. And a lot of times, though, it's, you know, downloads where I'll just suddenly have this understanding of something that's like, oh, I get that. You know, for example, nonlinear time. Here in the 3D world, we're used to cause and effect, that time goes in one linear direction and that's it. But when we get to the other side of life, we are no longer in linear time. We are in a place where time is seen as like a continuum, and that you can tune into different moments or tune out to different moments, or you can experience the entire thing all at once. And so the whispers have guided me in a good understanding of what nonlinear time is like. And it's almost like a three-dimensional layout where you have layers of possibility against layers of probability. And we are navigating through that. And as human beings, we collapse probable reality into actual reality through observation. So to us, it looks like a straight line. But to them, we are just like meandering in a three-dimensional reality that is just a matter of tuning in. You know, it's literally similarities attract and perpetuate. You tune into the things that you're going to observe, the things that you're going to bring into reality. And there's no other way to get that. You know, it's just, you get these perspectives, you get this understanding from these beings that live in a different kind of reality, and they're sharing little glimpses of that.
Do they present themselves to you as just knowledge? Do you actually see something or hear something? Or has that changed over the course of your life as well?
And that's another one of those all of the above. There, I can only think of it as like different layers of density, maybe. There are some that just, there's no form. There is just an awareness. There's just an understanding. There are others that do show up as human beings because they've had past lifetimes as human beings. So they still show up as human. There have been a lot of extraterrestrials showing up for a lot of my clients and even for me. And then there are the beings that are like amorphous blobs and some that are like geometric shapes. And they run the gamut. There's just so many different kinds of beings out there.
So do you know when one of them is a whisperer? Do you see others that aren't or experience Yes. others that aren't? Do you encounter them in as a negative presence sometimes? Or do Yes. you find, okay. So I was hoping you would say, no, I don't ever experience the negative side of this. But and there's always an opposite to everything.
And that's part of the interesting mix of all of the beings that are out there is working with whispers. You eventually, and this is what I've seen with clients that I've worked with over the years, they start to be able to get a feel or a taste or a flavor for what higher beings feel like and what their communication is like so they can recognize it. As well as like human beings, when you're talking to humans, human spirits, there's a certain flavor, there's a certain way that they talk. There's a certain output of energy, and you start to recognize that. You can almost think of it as like different kinds of languages or different frequencies of information that comes through. And when it comes to negative beings, negative entities, in my experience, in my like 50 years of experience doing this, I'm 52 now, the only time I found negative beings are human created. You know, we created them through our fears, through our beliefs, through our expectations, and they live up to those expectations. They live up to those beliefs. And this is part of that shadow work. And this is part of helping people deal with the paranormal challenges is coming to a better understanding of what created those entities in the first place or what drew them in so that we are not afraid of them and we're not falling victim to them, that we realize we are the creators or we're the attractors of these things. And because of that, we can shift our reality, we can shift our energy states, and that they're no longer affecting us. There's a great quote from Doctor Who that I love, and I tell my clients this all the time. Evil is just a matter of what side of the fork you're on. And so that's what these entities are. Like, if you're feeling a fear entity, great, laugh at it. Have fun. You're going to poison it. You're going to push it away. If you're feeling something oppressive and harsh in the room, have compassion to it. Instead of going, oh my God, what are you going to do to me? You go, oh, do you need some help? How can I help you? Because a lot of times it's our own fear getting in our way, our own beliefs of what we've been told things are like. And really, it might be just a little kid walking to the room. It might be grandma coming in to say hi. But when we go to a fear state, we're going to block it or we're going to create a bad experience for ourselves. But when we have fun with it, when we laugh with it, when we bring that compassion, if it is a negative being, it's going to go away. It doesn't like that energy. But if it is a misunderstanding and it's somebody that needs some help, or if it's a loved one coming to say hi, you just laid the ground so that you can have great open communication with them and a better understanding of what happened.
Hmm. What do you feel about, let's just say, and I'm using air quotes, a haunted house or a haunted location? You know, there's people doing paranormal investigations around the world constantly. And they're going looking for things like that, you know, things that they feel and maybe sometimes see or pick up on various devices. Do you feel like a location has things attached to it? Do you feel like it's more the people? For example, when I was a kid and I lived in a haunted house and, you know, and you lived with spirits. Now, I don't have things like whispers around me. I take that back. I think there are some, I don't know what I would call them, but I do feel like I've kind of got protectors maybe or leaders maybe that kind of help me find my way. But when I was a kid and I hear something walking in my house at night with very heavy footsteps, like it's a man and there's no man in my house, I found that terrifying as a child. I think I would find it terrifying as an adult, actually. If tonight I heard something like that, I wouldn't be so happy. What is, do you have any theories on what that is? And how do you deal with that sort of experience when you really don't want it around?
There are multiple things that happen. I do believe in sort of like the recorded thing, that somehow the walls or the materials in the world around us tend to record moments out of the past. And when environmental conditions are right, it plays back those moments. And so we tend to think the place is haunted, but it's something recorded.
Like a residual, yeah.
Another thing that's out there is what are called revenants. And whenever we die, it can be, death is pretty traumatic. Let's put it that way. And as human beings, when we encounter a traumatic moment, our soul fragments off. And especially if it's a traumatic death or an unexpected death, a fragment of that soul is reliving that moment over and over and over. It's tied to that location. And when people are sensitive to it or the energy is just right, they're going to pop up. They're going to show up. They're there. Another thing that goes on is lost souls. These are people who, for whatever reason, did not want to cross over into the other side, that they're sticking around. Maybe it's their home. Maybe they really love that home. Maybe they didn't want to leave their family. Maybe they're, and this is a big one, they are afraid of eternal punishment or torment or hell on the other side. And so they don't want to go because, you know, we've had so much of that. And so they're sticking around and refusing to go. And those kind of souls can be attached to a place or a person and can unduly influence that person. Again, they're not evil. They're not negative. They're just scared and lost. And so every single one of those cases, we need to do something completely different with. We have to treat them differently. And where we get into the problem with the big nasties, as I call them, they're called egregores. And an egregore is a collectively created entity. We as like a society, as a culture, will create these things through our belief. And how these show up is, let's say like Pennhurst. You know, the insane asylum, it was definitely a tragic place. There was definitely trauma going on there. Definitely people died under really bad circumstances. So that place is filled with revenants, and revenants that can be picked up on the K2 meters. It can be picked up on the ghost box, can be picked up on all of the devices. The psychics go there. They're like, wow, this place is full. But what happens is we tell the stories that, ooh, there's big scary things going on. Ooh, there's these awful things going on. And, you know, we have this perpetual message out there that the paranormal is the realm of demons and evil stuff. And that gets applied to these lost souls and these fragments that are stuck there. And the more people are talking about this, these demonic, these awful, scary, awful things, we will be creating an egregore that adheres to those traits that we gave to it. And now the investigators go in, and sure enough, they are getting these revenants, but this egregore is feeding off of that fear. It's kind of feeding off of that torment. And if you mess with it, you're going to take away its food source. So it's going to mess back, and therefore it starts to perpetuate itself through that. And that is a very complex situation to take care of. It's very tricky, and it's almost impossible sometimes to unravel an egregore. But to answer your question, yes, haunted houses. And why are they happen? There's a bunch of reasons why that happens.
Now, you have worked with paranormal investigators, and do you kind of work with them in the example you just gave us? Do you kind of help them, give them some ideas on how they can protect themselves when they're doing that sort of work, or even help them unpack what they have experienced? Because I think that would need unpacking sometimes.
Absolutely. I do have a paranormal training course that I've taken a few teams through, that where I go over the things that you need to do before you're investigating, the things you can do to keep yourself safe while investigating, and the things that you need to do after an investigation. And the teams that I've taught that to have given me like some amazing feedback that they've, like down in New Orleans, there's a lot of scary places down in New Orleans. And I'm saying that as somebody who's lived with the paranormal, because there's some pretty scary stuff that goes on there. And these investigators have been able to go into this place before they were attacked. They had problems with it. Now, when they take my techniques, they go into this place, they get good data. they come back out of it without an attack. They can go to sleep that night. They go home without feeling that they have something attached to them, and they don't have a bad experience, and they're still able to get good data from that moment because of the training I gave to them.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Kadrick Olson. For more information, visit his website, kadrick.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. For all of us here at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes. Thank you very much for listening.